Okay, right. Okay, now podcast is recording. Okay, thank you for coming along to this session 7 of Amblets. It seems we have a bit of a competition, it being the equinox, and there's all sorts of stuff going on all over the place on Second Life. So, you're lucky if you're hearing this, because this will be the last time this particular version of the Amblets session will run, for a number of reasons. I'm firmly fixed on reducing the number of sessions for the next run. 11 is getting a bit much. And if this one does survive, which I really hope so, because I do actually like this particular session, it's one of my favourites. The Real Life Witch Fest International 2013 in November, I'm going to be doing a completely revised version of this for my talk there on amulets and symbols in visualization and astral magic. So that text, or another variation of it, will replace this session 7. Then I normally run my Witchfest and Artemis Gathering talks here on Second Life first to try them out before presenting them, but I haven't actually finished writing it yet, or in a state that I'm actually happy with, so in this case you're going to have to wait a little bit longer. But anyway, this is one of my favourite ones, because this encompasses quite a lot of things I particularly like doing with visualization. Now, as usual, any questions, throw them in local chat or IM me after. You can catch me all over the place. I've got notes, I'll throw those out at the end. On there I'll have all my Twitter and Facebook and all the usual rubbish. Oh, and my blog, which is good. Keep an eye on that. Lots of fun things going on there at the moment. It seems to be, now that the summer's out of the way, I'm getting a little bit more crazy. Maybe a bit more crazy. Don't know. But anyway, let's get on with this one. So, amulets. Now, this session's sort of split into two. First, I'm going to talk about physical amulets and what they are, and then we'll go on to the adaptions for visualization. So, beginning with the basics of what's an amulet, and I'll mention it as amulet, although the same goes for talismans and other symbols or whatever you want. I just happen to use amulets because it's an easy word. It's one I can type. I can't type talismans. No, definitely not at the moment. Also at the moment I'm denying I have a cold, so excuse any sudden pauses, because that's probably me switching the mic mute on so I don't go coughing or sneezing down the mouthpiece through the mic, so bear with me. Oh, it's okay. It's been going around at work, and the kids and everyone else is falling in. I'm denying I have it. I'm just like burning so much energy at the moment, just say ignoring it, because I've got too much going on. But anyway, back to the text. So, amulets, or talismans, or whatever, have a long and established place in the occult world. From my point of view, possibly the Egyptian path has the greatest, the most prolific use of amulets associated with them for the dead and for the living. People tend to focus on Egyptian amulets for the dead, because so many are obviously discovered in mummies. I don't know many other paths how well amulets fit in with them, but I'll discuss some of the Egyptian methods and meanings, because some of this can be quite useful as examples. Now, they may have been busy, but they're the no ones. There are, nowadays, loads of amulets. People are knocking them up all the time, and this is good. They are a popular device and they are constantly evolving and appearing in many, many different forms, and that's brilliant. Now, however you look at the amulets, it comes down to symbolism. They are generally representing something, an objective, or a force, or a concept, an idea, that you want to repel or attract, depending on the context of what it is for. Now, the actual form can be simple as a visual representation of it, or it could be a very symbolic form. For example, and this is one I came up with for just this course. I don't know if it's real. Probably there could be some elements that's real, but for an example of the varying methods of how an amulet could appear physically, I came up with, let's create an amulet for the repulsion of a snake. Obviously a very fearsome beast in the antiquities. So there's a number of ways you could create an amulet to do this kind of warding. Perhaps the picture of an amulet etched on a tablet, a stone, clay, or whatever, or bit of wood, whatever you want, some medium. Or it could be a small model of the snake. Those are fairly representative of the visual aspect of the snake. Then you got for the more symbolic forms, such as a twisty bit of wood or a forked piece of wood to represent the forked tongue of a snake. Then perhaps you go down to even more abstract levels, and you could just have the deity of a snake deity emblem or statue or something that you associate with the snake indirectly, either through the use of the snake's deity being in control to force it to be away from you, or the snake deity can be just scare the snake or give you power over it in some way. It's not direct, but it's another form. And then I thought, what about a really abstract form of snake amulet? What about a ball of string? It's not directly related to a snake, but perhaps it could represent a trap for the snake, that if it was to go through it, it would get caught up in it and get stuck and not approach you. So, you can see there's some sort of varying levels of approach. Now, the effectiveness, which is different to the representation of the amulet that you're using, but the effectiveness, which is a separate thing, depends also on many aspects. You can be casting spells on them to empower them. There's the just had to cough a little bit there. Didn't want you to hear that one. And I've just lost my place in the notes. Oh, right, okay. The effectiveness. There's another. Okay, that's completely out of sync. There's a sympathetic magic aspect to amulets. That sort of goes along with the lines of the. I've completely lost my thread now. Okay, let's skip this. Right, now, I tend to look at amulets as a form of wish fulfillment. So what's the point of having these amulets? You carry them, you wear them, you do whatever, but what do they do? Now, the... The point of an amulet is, I find very associative with wishing. Now, with wishing, if you weren't here at one of the previous ones, which would have been probably the third session, maybe, or, yep, third one, I think, or fourth. Now, fourth one. My view of wishing is contrary to spellcraft. Or spell casting. With wishing, you are taking your desire, your wish, you throw it out or bury it into subconscious, and then recall it and push it out again. The constant reaffirming of the wish. Whereas with spell casting, you tend to create your intent, push it out, and then leave it. There's no recasting. Now, I find amulets, their effectiveness, it works along the same lines as wish fulfillment, where you are using the physical thing as a reaffirmation of your desire. In this case, your desire to repel or attract. Whereas you're not actively doing it, i.e. you're not pulling that intent back in and then pushing back out. The fact that the amulet is there and is a constant reminder, it may not be a regular constant reminder, but it's still there, you know it, you can feel it, it gives that reaffirmation of the wish that you needed to repel or attract something. Now, this is... why I quite like them, and I find them useful for visualization projection, because the similarities are there. What you picked up, what you can use in visualization, works very well with the same symbolic approach to amulets. Now, there are other aspects of a physical amulet that we need to take into account of when using them, or analysing their structure. Their physical aspects, there's many things to pick up there. Mostly, the material that they're constructed from is a very important design choice. Certain amulets need to go historically or mythologically or whatever you want to call it, have very strong certain symbolisation for certain materials. In mine, there's the Girdle of Isis. It tends to be a red garnet, or there's certain other symbols that require certain materials. Now, along with the physical material is the colour. That usually goes hand in hand, obviously, with the physical material, because most likely the colour was the primary choice. They saw a particular material has a certain colour. They couldn't find that colour in any other form, so they used that material. So I would probably say the colour is the primary choice, with the material because it was at hand of that colour. That's obviously just my opinion. I could be completely wrong, but, you know, I'm a practical kind of person. That's how I would do it. Now, the combination, and this is common, this is correspondences, something that many of us in our particular past will have encountered before. The correspondence between a certain colour, material, has a correspondence to something that represents some other cosmic force, be it attributed to a certain divinity or a deity or particular force like Mars. Say Mars. Actually, I don't know what some of these are because I tend not to use the correspondences much. They're outside my path, really. But knowing about these kind of things are useful. Now, so when it comes down to the choice of materials, colour and design, that obviously comes down to what it is you're trying to do. Now, if you're making your own amulets, many people get a little bit hung up on, it's not great, it's not perfect, I can't make things physically. Well, it doesn't have to be perfect. As long as the intent is there, the symbolism is there, you like the wish fulfillment, you have made the connection between your intent and a certain object. It's embedded in there. This is why making your own things are really powerful, because, you know, even a little twig can represent all sorts of things to you. To other people, it just represents a twig. Sometimes the amulet appearance does actually have a psychological effect as well as a magical effect on the viewer. If you think of, say, the classic... I'm not going to go down that route, because that could lead to trouble. There are some psychological things that can affect people through the images. But, okay, I'll go back to the creation. For me, I tend to work mostly with wood, because it's handy. I've got bits of wood floating around. I like making things, carving things. And I have my lovely little tree out in the garden that I make lots of things from. Clay, sometimes, or plaster, or whatever, or resin, to make castings from. And wax. Wax I'm very fond of, because it's so easy to mess with, and it can be very satisfying. There's a few other materials that I've recently been playing with, but, you know, this isn't actually important, because we're not going down to my physical making of things. But, oh, looks like we've got someone coming in. Hello, okay. No problem. Can you hear me? Okay, let you just get settled, and then we will continue. Yes, no. Still got no hold music. I really need to get myself some hold music to play while people are just checking they got the sound all right. Are you able to... Yep. Excellent. Cool. I will continue. Okay. The only things you've missed, and okay, you can probably pick this up on the podcast, but I'll just quickly recap, because I've not published the podcast yet. Physical stuff, physical amulets, design, colour, material, correspondence. That's the basics. Now, obviously people, the craftsmanship, if you do make your own amulets physically, are just down to your own artistic skills, or lack of. It doesn't matter. As I was saying, symbolism, intent are the keys. Now, shop-bought ones, there's plenty out there, and I'm not going to knock them, because although I tend to make my own, I still have bought things, as long as you cleanse them or whatever. And even so, in good old ancient Egyptian times, they churned them out by the millions, any of them. In fact, I've got a 18th dynasty Shabti little clay figure. It's about the length of my thumb. And actually, you can still see the fingerprints in them from the clay that was made about 2,000 years ago. It's really quite cool. It's really nice. It was just some guy must have just got a bit of Nile mud, just pushed a rough human shape, and there you go. And they're just like churned out. It's amulets, can just be made, boom, done, and get on with. Now, we'll get... Oh, crikey, the time is moving. Okay, let's get past. So, you know, if you use bought ones, cleansing them, this goes with any kind of symbolism, and this is where we're going to get down to. As long as you have a connection with it and it serves your purpose, doesn't matter. Let's get on, let's get away from this physical stuff, because this is where it gets more interesting. Okay, let's skip that. Okay, now I'm going to go through some examples. I think, how many have I got here? Two or three? Yep, three, I think. Three examples of amulets that are, okay, they're Egyptian, but I think you probably have all seen them, because they are deep within the public consciousness now, mainly because of the popularity of the Egyptian path. That can help and demonstrate some of the issues of translating physical amulets to amulets that can be used in visualization and astral magic. Now, the first one is a classic. It's the Egyptian, and I can't even spell it, and it's only got four letters, Ankh, the symbol of life, the looped cross. Now, that is a classic symbol. People wear it a lot around their neck, on chains. It's drawn everywhere. Most people know about it. Now, that is, as far as using it for visualization and astral magic, fantastic. It's the ideal one. It's a very simple shape of the loop cross. It's basically an Egyptian hieroglyph. It's a word for life. Happy. It's sort of the positiveness of life. Now, the Egyptians love puns on words, and one interesting aspect of that particular hieroglyph, because it has the vertical and then the loop, the Ankh was also the Egyptian word for mirror, so they tended to use that symbol of life as a hand mirror, with the loop being filled in with the actual mirror surface. And then if you think about it, if you look into the mirror, then look back at yourself, then you're sort of reaffirming your life, your vitality, by looking in the mirror every day. It's a brilliant, brilliant thing, and they just love these puns. And the puns were deeper, more symbolic too. So, as far as that one goes, that's a good one to go for. The next one is the Eye of Horus, the Eye of Horus. It's either left-facing or right-facing. Symbolically, it does actually have importance, because the left eye of Horus is the moon, the right eye of Horus is the sun. So you have a dualistic energy force going on. One of the sun, one of the moon. So that depends on which way it looks. If it looks to the left, that's the left eye. If it looks to the right, that's the right eye. But even so, there's a huge amount of symbolism going on here. Again, one that's a little bit more complex. It's not a hieroglyph. It's, in fact, I think, a dozen hieroglyphs. It's their... Naz is going to get a little bit technical, but bear with me. Each stroke is in the actual eye, not the eyebrow bit at the top. But each stroke of the main eyeball, the pupil, the eye, the actual eyeball, and the little falcon marks underneath of that represent Horus. They are all actually Egyptian hieroglyphs for fractions, and each fraction is given, but they only add up to 63 over 64. That's so that it's just 1/64 short. But because they are all then combined, that creates the 1/64, creates the whole, and that creates the one. It's a very, there's a lot of complex mysticism going on here. It's worth going, if you want to look at that one in particular, I would recommend going off and looking at Thoth, who created it for Horus. No, it's the Eye of Horus. But anyway, now, again, those are just strokes. There's in the there's no particular symbolism in any material or colour associations with it. There's so many examples of different materials used and different designs, you know, there is no one, you got to use this colour and thing. So that's great. That's another reasonably good one. A little bit complicated, but it's good. Now, the third one is a really tricky one. It's the Egyptian scarab, Khepri. Now, that actually is one of the most prolific of the Egyptian amulets, mainly because it's a really simple shape of a sort of squashed dome, and with a little bits of beetle shape done to it. So obviously that must have been so easy for the guys to make that they churn them out by the millions. Now that has a great, like the Ankh has, and the Eye of Horus, has great positive life force association with it. But that one doesn't lend itself very well, if at all, to visualization, because it's not that inspiring shape. Yes, the Isis knot, that the Menet, that is a great one. In fact, I did mention that earlier, because that one does actually have some material association with it. A red garnet. It's because it's that one is a interesting shape because it's the they reckon. Because it's the lotus leaf, that it represents the female genitals, because it's sacred to fertility, to Isis, and the red is her menstrual blood, and there's the whole loads of magic revolves around that kind of stuff for her. So that is a really interesting one, and as I was saying earlier before you came in, the Egyptians had were probably the most prolific amulet makers. There are loads. There's like another one where there's two fingers together, your index and middle finger, just those two. And there's a ladder one. There's the other classic one of the Tet, which is a pillar with horizontal lines, which represents the spine of Osiris. I digress. There's loads to play with, and if your particular path doesn't include huge amount of amulets, have a play with those, because there's some really good stuff in there. I've got plenty of books on Egyptian amulets. There's loads out there. If you want any references, let me know and I can dish them out for what books to go for. But those three do help with some of the issues. Simplicity, the first two, helps with visualization. Now, another take on amulets is, okay, we've got all these classic ones from the Egyptian path. Your own path's probably got a number of things that come in. But what about making your own? Because it doesn't have to be really obvious. Okay, my throat almost went then. Now, back in the Middle Ages, where most of the witches and whatever were being persecuted, there was a need to keep the craft, even into modern times, hidden or not so obvious. So everyday things were used. Obviously, the broom in the besom is an obvious one. I know some people use their wooden spoons for wands. So there's everyday items you can use. Now, while writing this, sort of random thoughts came to me of a variety of possible amulets. Now, this is really rubbishy stuff, completely random, so bear with me. They're not that, I wouldn't possibly use all of them, although one of them I do use. What about a razor blade to grant razor sharp wit? I don't use that one, obviously. Now, a piece of paper with lots of writing on so you don't suffer writer's block. I don't use that one. A small mirror to ward against aging. I don't use that one either. I love this one. An empty crisp packet to ward off the munches. I don't use that one. A broken watch so you're never late or always have lots of spare time. I wish. So I don't use that one. Ah, this one's pretty cool. A party blower, so that life is just one long party and full of fun. I think that's lovely. A key so you won't get locked out of any door. Yeah, I can join all the other keys. A bit of paper with I will not, with lots of them, things not to do. That's a literal one. I'll come back to words shortly. Now, this is the one that I do use, and it rarely fails me, and that is an umbrella to ward off the rain. Well, there you go. You've got your own complete arsenal of amulets already. Yes, they are. Not sure whether I mentioned this before you came in or not. I probably might have missed this bit, but that's fine. Where is with visualization and astral magic and wishing in particular? I usually take my intent, push it out, and bring it back to reinforce that intent continuously. Whereas with spellcraft, you create your intent, cast a spell, and forget it. Now, that's the wishing is very similar to the amulets in that the amulet is always there and it's a constant reminder, therefore it's constantly pushing out your desire to repel or attract a particular objective. So that's how I see amulets working. They are a constant affirmation, a constant refresh of your intent to cast. So that's hopefully got ya. Now, those things I just mentioned are fairly trivial. But as I said at the very beginning, is if as long as you have that intent associated with that item, even if other people don't know, and that could be a very good way of hiding amulets, because it could just be something very unobtrusive, which means a lot to you, but others don't. And it's just that refresh of your affirmation to reinforce the intent for the desire. So, how do we then start to move this towards a visualized or astral magic form? Well, we take the elements that we have within the physical ones and try and translate them to the visualized form. Now, if you are going for, and this is the most impractical, there's two sides to the visualization as far as I'm concerned. There is the sitting in a meditative state with eyes shut, having a good time, and getting full visual stuff going, brilliant. Then there is the stuff with eyes open, out and about, doing daily life, and still wanting to do visualization and things on the go. Now, the thing here is, visualized amulets aren't much good if every time you need to use them, you need to sit down and meditate. They're great for the long objective ones, the long term stuff, where if you have your regular meditative half hour or whatever you want to do, now and again, or daily, or whatever you want to do, then that's nice. Now, if you're in a full meditative state, you can obviously visualize a shape, color, material, depending on your strength of visualization, how much you can get it to feel realistic to you. Does that have still a magical effect? Yes. Things you create through your mind, through, and this goes for all the previous stuff I've done here in these sessions on visualization of astral magic, it's still real. If you feel convinced that it's real to you, it is real, and it will have an effect externally. Now, lovely. If you can get all the full works going, great. But if you're out and about and you need it quick, with eyes open, you might get, still, if you're, depending on the complexity, still get the material, colour and so on with eyes open. Fine. But for me, I like speed, practical. I like to be able to cast very quick with minimum of fuss, but still have that intent and that force of intent behind it. So the things I tend to go for are simplicity, because if it's simple, it can be done quickly and easily and still be effective. Now, even though my path is Egyptian, although not completely Egyptian, I have other aspects to my path, buy my book, I get my plug in, it's actually currently at the printers as I speak. I don't use Egyptian hieroglyphs to a great extent, because they are complex shapes and I don't want to misinterpret them. Okay, that might be different with the Eye of Horus and the Ankh symbol and a couple of the other more obvious ones, because they are simple and they are already, I'm so familiar with them. I tend to go for the runic characters. Now, I tend to use, effectively, anything that I could draw. If I could draw it with pencil and paper quickly, that's my preference for casting of any kind of amulet. If I can sketch it on a pencil and paper, then I can probably visualize it really quick. It's practical. Runes are ideal for that because they are mostly straight lines. There's a few curves, but mostly they are straight lines, and you can combine them. They are really good for a bind rune if you with multiple content. Now, I've sort of forgotten a lot of my rune stuff over the years. I tend to only use a couple that I need because they're useful. Now, I find those very easy to visualize instantly. Now, there are other written ones that I tend to also use, and that's if I want to spend a little bit more time, I'll actually draw them on a piece of paper and fold them up and put them in my wallet, because that's generally with me all the time. Also, I've started to go towards the point of my mobile phone. It's an Android phone, it's one of the Samsung Android ones. and it's got to unlock it, you can put a pin number in, or you can draw on the screen a shape. I actually now have that as a bind rune that I use to unlock it. And because that bind rune is being used all the time, I'm recasting it, because I'm practically redrawing it a number of times a day. Okay, it's limited on the kind of bind rune I can do, because there's only so much it lets me record for the shape. There's a variety of ways you can reinforce the intent. As I say, I like to be practical and do stuff on the move. I tend to, if it's something that can be repeated in my daily life, as in my phone, opening that with a bind rune, brilliant. There's also other ones I tend to use on a regular basis, such as, and I've mentioned this a number of times, it's the rad rune that's associated with travel. I tend to cast that before I move in the car, and it's brilliant for travel related things. Now, you can then start getting very complex when you start doing the written form. For example, you have sigils. Now, I've been digging into these a little bit to try and grasp what they are. They tend to be more of Rosicrucian origin. Also, they're based on Hebrew encoding, which I don't know much about, so I tend not to use them. But you've probably seen them, they're all over like the Keys of Solomon and Abramelin and all sorts of things for doing interesting things for evocation. Nothing I tend to really mess around with. We're getting close to the time again. But if it's something quick, and there's also other forms like the Greek Geometrica, the magic squares, if you've seen those. For me, I don't do Sudoku, so I can't really probably visualise a magic square really quick. But if that's your thing, and you are Sudoku mad, you could probably visualise a magic square easily. And that could be a way to, well, some people do, I've never grasped it, numbers aren't my thing, so I tend to not to mess with Geometrica and number encoding. Now this is probably coming in from the evocation stuff and thought forms that are later sessions, but this actually could apply, talking of Geometrica. Seeing we're here now, I'll mention it. With thought form creation, you embed your intent into that creature you're trying to create. Now, some books I've seen on this will actually use encoding of your intent and turn it into an acronym. For example, you'd write a spell, let's say, I'll do it here in local chat off the top of my head. Say I want a new job, so like that. So acronym is IWANJ. Yeah, okay. IWANJA. Okay. Not a good example, but what would then happen is with the let's relate this to amulets now, because I want a new job is not a good thing for doing in a thought form, but that's encoding my intent into a word, a very bad word. You could play with acronyms a bit to make something slightly more useful, but that word could then encapsulate that desire that I can then create an amulet from. Now, I could probably encode that as a rune. I'm not sure if J is in the runic language. I can't remember off the top of my head if it is. Yeah, and a sigil. But it's encoding of the intent, like number correspondences, or where you would like add up all the letters of your name of the intent, add the number up, and the number symbolizes the intent. It's whatever you can do to encode the intent. Once you get it down to something that's easily memorable, into something that can be easily and quickly recalled, then as you are going about your day life, you can just quickly get that symbol up in your head, hold it for a couple of seconds, and use it however you want to. For example, let's say keep that dog away as a amulet. Don't like dogs, you want to keep the dog away, there's some nasty dogs. That one is possibly a good one. So let's say KTDA. Nope, still a very bad acronym, KTDA. I'm really not getting very good at these aren't very good examples. I'm just making this up as I go along, as you can probably tell. But if dog away keep Dak. Yeah, dog away keep. Yeah, okay, that sounds a bit Dak. That's a good sound. Now, and this is another part to it too, and this goes along the same lines as any casting. In fact, this is the next session as well. After this is on words and the vocalization. Now, if I have this amulet and I call it the Dak amulet, the dog away keeper, I could then create a sigil from that word. Either take some runes, turn that into a bind rune. Now, I then want to cast it on a, because it's a useful dog repellent. I could then be out and about. I see the dog. I stop for a short moment, picture the amulet, and push it towards it to see and keep it away, or put it onto the ground or an area that I want the dog to keep away from, and then let that intent flow, break it off, and just keep retrying until it has an effect. This is why it's easier that if it is very simple to construct in your mind while with your eyes open, that you will tend to use it more, because it's simple. It is a lot easier. Okay, so that's actually some of the ideas I've got for the Witchfest talk. So that has crept in, but there you go. So you got a bit of it early. Spoiler alert, I should have mentioned that. Oh, yes, you're coming along, aren't you? I forgot you're in the UK. Ah, okay. right. Okay, and the time has caught up again. Before I stop the podcast recording, I'm just going to sort out the notes, dishing those out. If there's any questions, throw them out, and I'll keep the recording going for those people listening at home. Should there be anything? What I will do is I will throw out previous ones too for people who may have missed them. If you've got them, ditch them. It doesn't matter. As previously, I shall put some PDF versions of these up on the blog in the next few days, before, so it's a little bit nicer to read, because note cards are crap, because they lose all the formatting. So, cool. Oh no, that's the keeping yourself safe one was reasonably actually quite nice. There's a few good protection methods I use, three or four of them. They tend to be physical protection methods, but I tend to use them also for visualization. So, and they still work very well. Okay, not to worry. We can have a little chat if you want, but come along to the healing circle. Next session will be in 2 weeks on words, but in a week on Monday will be the healing circle at the tavern at 1 p.m. Second Life time or 9 p.m. UK time. Assuming the clocks don't go back this week, next week. No, I think it's October. So I think we've got another month before I get confused over times. But if there's no questions for this. Oh, okay. When using wordings, would a person not use future tense? Yeah, well, it's whatever makes sense. You could use, so instead of keep dog away, would it be dog stays away? Yeah, let's see, how does that one work? Dog stay away. DSA. Stay away, dog. Sad. Oh, sad. Oh yeah, sad. But I have a new job or want a new job. Yeah, it's whatever way you can get the intent working. Okay. So it's trying whatever works, but as it is, as I always say, keep it simple, because that I find the most effective form of visualization and wishing. Highly effective. Okay, if I think my throat is just about alive still. So before, oh, someone's typing. Oh, it's fine. I'm just denying it. I haven't got a cold. You see, this is perfect. Positive affirmation. I have not got a cold. It does not exist. Those bugs go away. You see, I could create an amulet. Let's think. Germs away. What's that? Germs away. No, germs away now. What's that? Gan. Gan. Not sure about that one. It might work. Yeah. It's sim. No. Oh, actually, I'll quickly get on this, because this is now. This is nag. Now go away, germ. Nag. I like that one. Nag the germs. This goes into the next session, but words are very useful in this, because like with, well, when you cast the spell, you tend to be using a vocal aspect. I tend to go along the lines of, in my magic, is as most often a practical form. I tend not to do a huge amount of, well, actually, I'm crap at poetry. That probably says it all. Therefore, my spells are not very poetic. They're not long bits of text. They are to the point. My intent is, like, for example, let's say the bugs, this cold go away. It would be vocalised in one or two words, if that. It's, that's the intent, boom, it done. Oh, yeah, it's quite right, Mitch. It's like, it's gotta be, why, I initially in my path, I looked at ceremonial magic, and it was ceremonial, ritual, has its place, but not for me. I don't have the attention. I don't have the, well, for example, I'm solitary, so what's the point of having a 15-piece ritual go on when it's only me taking all the places to do all the little speaking bits? So a lot of faff for no reason. Keep it simple, intent, and just do it. Yeah, off the top of the head, just go. Just go. It's as I feel at that time, and that's how I prefer to do my craft. So when I'm using amulets or any symbols, I tend to have a vocal, or not even if it's not physically vocal, it's in my head that I'm using a word that matches with it, because that adds to the power. And that's because what I mentioned earlier about the things you lose bringing over a physical amulet into a visualization or astral form, you lose the physical colour, the material correspondences associated with that amulet, so all you're left with is just a shape. So what can I add to the shape can be done simply without having to resort to physical things, and that tends to be a vocal word. So you probably wouldn't in a physical amulet have a vocal word, because it's physical, it's the shape, everything's there. But with a visualized form, you have the shape, but you can throw in the word with it, because you're visualizing the image in your head. No one's going to hear it if you whisper something as well, or say the word in your head. It adds to the power. So that's another thing, and I think that's another thing coming from the Witchfest talk as well. I must stop talking now. I'm giving it away, especially for those of you who are coming. So I think I shall wrap it up then. No, you won't, because there's going to be some more fun things there, because I haven't finished writing it. I'm not happy with it still, and I won't get happy. Yay, freaking excited, me too, woo! Namely for the books that's coming, my book, okay, that's only the second time I've mentioned it in this talk. I will now stop. So, yeah, I'm being very restrained on the forums about this. So, okay, thank you for coming along. Thank you for those on the podcast listening. As I say, next session in 2 weeks on the power of words, the vocal aspect of what I do, which I've already covered some of. Yay. And if you've forgotten, thank you. I shall stop the recording now.